All right, and we are here now with our episode section of the Duluth Rundown podcast. We are joined by Jarawaman and Harry Cottrell. And first, I want to extend either my congratulations or my condolences to Jaro because he is our first repeat guest on the. So I'm not sure if that's...
It's an honor either way.
Oh, okay, good. And then we also, our first-time guest is Harry Cottrell here. Harry, thanks for coming on to the program.
My pleasure.
Tell us a little bit about kind of some of your running history, when you got started, that kind of thing, how you got involved in the sport.
Okay. My first race was 1954. I was 8 years old. Saw Roger Bannister run the first sub-4-minute mile on the newsreel at the movies. Decided,
wow,
that's what I want to do. So we had an elementary school track meet. I ran the mile. Still remember, ran 8:50. I said, okay, I got to cut 5 minutes off. The rest of my life, I got 4.5 of it. The last 30 seconds are the tough, are the tough 30 seconds. Started running seriously sophomore year in high school. Okay. And pretty much was a runner. That'd be, 1961, 62, up until last year, in which my knees finally went because of arthritis, both knees. Combination of a few things, heredity, age, and possibly running probably 85,000 of my 90,000 miles on pavement.
So
one of the things I do recommend is go for softer surfaces.
Yeah,
but so I ran high school, a little bit in college, road race, really kind of came into my own mid-30s road racing, and that's when all of my times plummeted.
Okay.
And got enough consistency. So, you know, I mean, nothing super in the big sense of things, but, you know, was able to get under 15 minutes for 5K and break 31 for 10K and run a 224 marathon. So, and I ran 150K, the old Edmund Fitz.
Nice.
Ran the 50K.
Yeah.
And that was fun. So had moderate success, but it was more just the long run of basically just under 60 years of racing.
Which, do you take more pride in, your times or the duration?
Probably the duration.
Mm-hmm.
Now looking back on it,
yeah,
you know, realizing that I was real fortunate.
Yeah.
And even though it came to an end, I was fortunate.
Yeah. Well, I think he's being a little bit, moderate success. He's understating that.
I know.
If you were to age grade his, you know, late stuff and his middle stuff, it's pretty high.
Yeah, I wanted to touch on that too, because I think it's fascinating when all of the runners talk about their own PRs and their times. And, you know, every runner that I've known is going to kind of ho-hum it a little bit. But I think it's interesting just to kind of, to really think about, those are fast times. And of course, we're never as fast as we wanted to be. That's just a fact.
Oh, yeah.
And that's good. That's a good thing, because we should always desire for a little bit more. But I think it's good to kind of say, you know what, pat myself on the back, because I was pretty damn good.
Yeah, actually, I think on age graded, my 5:58 mile at 69 was better than my PR mile.
You know,
I age graded.
Wow. Yeah. So that's really good.
Yeah, and I was really, really thrilled to do it. I disappointed I couldn't do it at 70.
Well, another thing, when I hear stuff like that gives me hope then for the future too. So.
Yeah. And where are you from, Harry?
Oh, originally north coast of California, Humboldt County. It's a born and raised on the coast, about 100 miles south of Oregon, right on the coast. And so I went to Humboldt State University, which was basically across the street from where I grew up.
Cool.
And ran a bit there.
And what brought you to Minnesota?
You marry a Minnesotan, you move to Minnesota. There's a law that I was unaware of. My wife had went out to go to Humboldt State, and then we met Minnie. She was out there 11 years. She stayed afterwards.
Yeah.
So when we got married, we had decided to move to her to move back and to move to Minnesota. That's how I ended up here.
Yeah.
And when was that?
1984. And really, really enjoyed the road racing scene in the cities. I mean, it still is to this day.
Yeah.
You know, the number of races, and in those days, the quality of the races. I mean, we had a group that ran together, and really, more than running friends, really socially, and some of my best friends I've ever made, and we still stay in touch. But there was a group of us that ran Sunday morning 20-milers.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if there's ever a day all 12 showed up. You know, it would be different. But you've got, you know, on an average day, anywhere from 5 to 8 guys showing up, and everyone had run a sub-230 marathon.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you, those workouts, John Naslin, the famous John Naslin, refused to train with us anymore. He said, "You guys are crazy." Because, I mean, those 20-milers, we go out easy for 10, and then somebody had dropped the hammer for the... We usually go 22 to 24, around 10. Somebody had dropped the hammer. You make the choice, okay, do I go with them today or let them go?
Yeah.
Those last 5-10 miles were just absolutely flying. But we loved it. It was fun.
Yeah.
Kind of reminds me of a story I heard about Frank Shorter. He would do 20 miles or 2 hours, whichever came first.
Yeah.
Yeah, and for him it was usually like 20 miles would come before 2 hours.
Yeah, also I think all of us in running have run workouts that you really don't talk much about because nobody would believe you. And one of the best was reading an article about Frank Shorter, and he said that he had workouts that nobody would ever believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it actually made me feel better because you don't know when you're going to have that day.
Mm-hmm.
And it is one thing that I'd advise anybody. When you feel you're having that day, just go for it. Who cares if it's a workout?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If it's a scheduled easy day and things are clicking,
yeah, things
go ahead
are clicking,
and fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go for it. Who cares?
But on a soft surface, not on a hard
surface.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. But see, that's the problem is if you like to run fast, and in my early days of running, I really came out of the Piercy Serity training, was everything fast. Piercy Serity, of course, a great Australian coach, the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, Kurt Elliott.
Yeah, and so my first real good coach in high school was a disciple of Serity.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was, so I was raised on this run fast, mm-hmm. you know, in training. I mean fast. And so I always loved it. That was my real, even when I made my comeback in my late 60s and running with Jarl and the group, he could verify. For an old man, I would pound these workouts.
So Harry would be chasing the 30-year-old guy,
uh-huh.
and I'd be chasing Harry. And we were running, I don't know how fast, but it was... Harry refused to let the guy go.
Yeah.
Donnie Sazima.
Oh, yeah,
on
Donnie.
Some of our runs.
Yeah.
And Harry
Donnie
was
does
sick
not
lay
back either. No. He goes hard.
So they're kindred spirits.
Yes.
And I can do it if I have to, but I don't want to. But I'm trying to hang on to Harry. And there were many runs like that recently.
And that was one of the problems long term. If I had to do over again, I wouldn't have done as many of those long, hard runs on pavement.
Yeah.
I mean, really pounding.
How about the 10 milers on the track?
Well, that's a little softer surface, but I love those too. That was another thing.
Yeah.
Hard 10 milers on the track, workouts.
Ouch. I did a 10 miler on the track once, but that was not fun.
Indoors.
Oh, right? Indoors? Oh, jeez. Yeah, no. No, I didn't do that.
Oh, yeah. I did a lot of outdoors, several indoors. Yeah.
I did once on outdoor track. Yeah.
That's as much brain training as physical almost, just the mental.
Yeah, back in
monotony.
In the 80s, when I was running really well, before a marathon, I'd always run a hard 10 miler on a track. It was as much mental as physical.
At marathon race pace?
Generally
kind of?
Close to it. Yeah. Yeah. And at least the last 5 would be.
Yeah.
Might start out, you know, around 6s or so, and then you just start dropping it. But it was the mental thing of just pounding lap after lap after lap.
And it's great to get the feedback every 400 or 200 or
on pace.
Pace-wise. Because there's no GPS watches in those days. Those things are relatively young
and
still.
And I still don't have one.
Right, yeah. I'm 2 years anniversary of not using one. So a little over 2 years. Yeah. Well, that's a good segue into kind of the theme of our whole talk today is just kind of training principles, training ideas, what has worked for you guys in the past, some of the other ideas of other coaches. You mentioned Percy Serity and kind of his relatively intense work, especially the sand dune. He's famous for those sand dunes out there in Perth,
and
outside of Perth.
I have to interrupt, but that's one of the things that I miss here.
You guys had them at Humboldt.
Oh yeah. Yeah. As far as from a coaching perspective, not for this old body, mm-hmm. but I truly believe the best way to generate speed is sand dunes.
Yeah.
You know, and just powering up sand dunes. Yeah. Like the pictures you see of Cerity.
Right.
We had the same setup where I grew up. I mean, we're only a few miles from the beach.
Exactly.
And yeah. That's the one thing. And I got some comments from my old buddies in California about, how can you coach without sand dunes?
Well, we have one over on Park Point. There's one little sand dune over there. I don't know if that counts for your standards. There's a great video on YouTube of some Humboldt State. Are you?
He's in there.
Are you in that video?
The Harriers. I'm in it.
Is that right? Yeah, that's a great video.
Yeah, I mean, that was the 68 cross-country season. It was right after I got out of the Air
Force. The Joy of Running, the Harriers, on YouTube. So yeah. I just looked it up.
And then there's a more recent version of the Harriers.
Okay, excellent.
Yeah, that friends, those that were in the original Harriers film the more recent version.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a cool video. If any of our listeners want to check that out, it's a little black and white film made kind of by some of the college kids, I think, at the time.
It was a graduate project for Dean, I forget Dean's last name, but who was also a runner. Okay. Himself, and he was a graduate student in art, and he had this idea, and it turned into a great film. Not because I'm in it, but
it is a good film. It's a really cool film. We'll show them the sand dune workouts.
Cool.
Cool.
Well, I was kind of thinking, just talking. You know, I think we've all probably put together different training programs, and we mentioned, you know, training for what, like what race, 5K, marathon. I think those are probably the two most common that we've all done. So maybe that might be a first kind of question, is what's the difference in training, do you think, between something like you're going for a 5K campaign, you're going for a marathon campaign, or a 50K, 100 mile? I mean, how does the training differ? And, you know, to start off for me, I really feel like if I get in good marathon shape, doesn't matter the distance, I'm good to go. And so I kind of keep that same template, and really I don't think there's a little bit of specificity kind of like day to day or like on the long run, like if it's a 100K trail, you know, my long run's on trail at that pace, you know, but I still run 2 hours, you know, and that's kind of my long run. So yeah, what's the difference in training mentality or methodology when it comes to a wide variety of distances?
My training, when I was in my prime, I was being coached by Vern Johnson, and all of his training was based on Arthur Lydiard's training. And I think, if I'm correct, all the runners under him who were training from the 800 to the marathon all did the same mileage buildup. Yes. They're all running 100 miles a week.
Yep.
And that goes on for as long as you can. And then at some point, as they approach the Olympics or World Champions or whatever the race is, they separate into smaller groups and then start doing more specific training for their event. But I took that, so I was training for the 5K to the marathon, but it all started with the 100 mile weeks mm-hmm. for months and months and months, and that's the kind of the thing you build on and go from there.
So is that how long do you take to build up? Do you just say, where am I at, and just build up gradually, do 100, or are you just trying to get there by any means possible?
It's kind of just everything fell into place for me, because I look back at my training log, and my mileage went up from 50 miles a week to 100 miles a week over like a 5-year period, and by the time I was 30, which was in my prime, I was already there. So a good coach is going to think long term and try to build you up to it, but there's really no substitute for the 100-mile week, provided you have the lifestyle that accommodates that. That's, and most people can't do that.
Yeah.
So, like, for instance, you can sleep a lot, you can eat a lot.
Yes. Yeah, you don't have a really demanding job.
Yeah.
You know, you could maybe take a nap now and then, get massage, you know.
Yeah.
We were just running. We weren't doing any cross training. It was just the miles, 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 and we did that for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. But that's probably part of the reason that I'm so tired now, is all those 100-mile weeks back in the day.
And I was a low-mileage runner, even in my peak years, 60 to 80 miles a week.
See, that's low.
That's a note that we'll come back to here.
Yeah.
But, you know, because a lot of distance runners are at the 120, 140. I know Charlie Lawrence, who went to the U, forget where he was. Matt Welch's nemesis in high school, and then they ran together at the U. But I know last time I saw Charlie, now he's on the caper, but he had come off 80 to 100 mile weeks, 10 days off, and then they're going 120, 130 for a few months. Yeah. You know, and that's what, but he's a professional runner.
Right.
Yeah. Lifetime. Myself, I figure I probably ran about six weeks in my life that I had a 100 mile week. My body just was never made to run that. And when I ran a 100 mile week, I think I would echo Jarl. Don't have a whole lot on your plate.
Yeah.
And when I did it, it was kind of an event for me. Mm-hmm. And
can
I had
I
nothing.
Do this?
Yeah, yeah. You know, I would do it like during a break. Uh-huh. You know, try to do it. But I was always slower. But I always think of two statements that I've heard. My first college coach, when it comes to training, this would be Ford Hess. This is who was Jim's predecessor, Jim Hunt's predecessor at Humboldt State. His comment was always, one man's medicine's another man's poison.
Yeah.
And I always have to remember, and I think that's the difficult in giving training advice. You know, Jarl's body could handle 100 miles a week. I could not.
Yeah.
It, you know, that's just life.
Was it part of it because when you were doing 70, 80 miles a week, you were running harder than my easy 100 miles a week? You
yeah,
know?
And that may have been, and yeah, that may have been part of it. Yeah. Like I said, the other was Jumbo Elliott, famed coach at Villanova, and always talked about the KISS system, keep it simple, stupid.
Uh-huh.
You know, because Marty Licori, who was one of America's great milers, in one of article on Marty is something he wrote, he said that when they started intervals, they were running 80-second quarters or 400s now. And then, you know, you just get a little faster. Well, yeah. And then when you get into the racing season, you know, he was running them at 55.
Yeah.
You know, and multiple, you know, but
an 80-second quarter for guys at that speed is slow.
Yeah. Well, that's jogging, but it's just that whole idea. And also, don't get too complicated.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Mike, I was like you, and maybe all of us were, of really training. I got to the point where, because of the weather on the West Coast, even though I was in the rainforest, we races year round, and really trained for the marathon. And if I was in good marathon shape, I figured I could run a good, my 5K and 10K PRs were speed work for a marathon. I ran, I mean, just, it was almost foolish because it probably been 2-3 weeks before I ran 30-38 10K and came back and on the track 3 nights later and totally tied up and still ran 15 flat 5K.
Uh-huh.
And it was, okay, now I'm ready for the marathon. And I ran my 2:24 marathon because I was on 2:22 pace through 23 miles when everything collapsed. You know, the saying of hitting the wall, the wheels come off, the bear on your back, they all happened.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, when I was running in the cities, because I ran with a good group of, you know, big group of good runners, and almost everyone was the same, you know, that... You know, and I don't know. It'd be interesting because, you know, I don't know why I would have concentrated at 5K, 10K and done more speed work, which I did very, very little of, speed work or intervals.
Sure.
So, sometimes I go a year without doing any.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't know if I could have run that much faster, 5K or 10K.
If you focused right on it.
Yeah, because I mean, I ran them off strength instead of speed. And I was fortunate for a distance runner to have good natural speed.
Yeah.
You know, most distance runners, they'll, you know, I'm talking kind of run-of-the-mill road racers and all that, you know, didn't run 51-second quarters in college, you know, and so they don't have that speed. So I was fortunate to have that.
Uh-huh.
But
51?
Naturally.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. 51 seconds for a quarter.
High 51.
I know, but still, that makes your range even better.
Yeah. Well, I think that really just kind of answers the question is always like, what should I do to train? And the first two words out of for that next answer should be, it depends. And then you go from there. It depends on how many miles you've been running for the last 6 months, how many miles you've been running for the last 10 years. Yeah. What's your age? What's your goal? There's so many factors. Every single person's a little bit different, and each individual is a little bit different every handful of years. And so it's always going to change for an individual over time anyway. So there's just so few givens in the training world.
I would say for most runners, in my mind, I think there are two givens.
Okay. Yeah.
During the week, one long run.
Yes.
And one fast run.
Yes.
So I think from my perspective, if I was to give advice, and like I say, remembering my first advice of one man's medicine is another man's poison,
yes.
is that you need to build around that. And so those two should be, you know, about 3 days apart, whatever, that you shouldn't be doing them back to back. But I really believe in again, depending on the distance you're running, the long run, you know, if you're concentrating on 5K, 10K, you probably don't need to run more than 10, 12 miles on your long run.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Though most do.
You certainly can.
Yeah.
If you can handle the mileage.
Yeah. I mean, you look at Steve Scott as a miler.
Right.
3:48 miler or 3:47 miler, he used to run 15 miles every Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you need the long run and something fast, and it doesn't have to be intervals necessarily. I did I loved running intervals, but it's fun with the group.
Mm-hmm.
But as I got older, my hamstrings had problems with it. But when I say hard, I mean like a tempo run.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a hard run and just the last 800,000 meters just going for
kind of a progressive
can't remember the individual's name. I don't know if Gerald read about, but it was a European runner probably in the 70s who 3:40 5K runner, so legit to put it mildly.
Mm-hmm.
And his speed work was all he did was go out and long runs. And then the last 1,000 meters were just flat out. And that's how he developed his speed.
Interesting.
Wow.
Yeah, but he didn't do intervals. That was it. But, I mean, every run finished with just a gut-wrenching 1,000 meters.
Wow.
Yeah. I know one of the American, kind of Moroccan and then American marathoners in the early 2000s, Khalid Kanouchi, used to always finish his long runs hard, like to the point where he was, it's like race pace kind of effort for his last mile or so of his long runs. He used to do that same thing on his long runs, just finish them as hard as he could. Yeah. It's interesting to me because there's just so many different theories. You can talk about Lydiard's approach and, Emil Zatopek's with his classic just 400 repeats all the time, that kind of stuff. All these different things seem to work.
40 of them.
Yeah. 40 by 400, multiple times a week probably, But the one thing about that too, about the Zatopek thing is when you're doing that many repeats, that in itself is a lot of volume. That's already a lot of high miles.
Yeah.
So. And also, it's one thing that, I don't know, I've noticed, and there's reasons for it, but in my day, when we did intervals, you never stopped running. Meaning, you ran hard, easy. You slowed down, but you never stopped. You never walked.
Gotcha.
So, say the traditional 2400s.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're running 20, you're jogging 20.
Yep.
That's 40, that's 10 miles
of
continuous running. And often with 2 mile warm-up and 2 mile cool-down, it really ends up being a continuous 14-mile run.
Yes.
So,
With intensity,
so even if you run 20 quarters or 2400s, that's a 10-mile run.
And that kind of workout you could just do on the road as well. You could you could just go hard for, say
a minute, 90 seconds, 2 minutes,
like
whatever you want.
And then you'd go easy for 2 minutes. And exactly. And then just do that all on the road and not do it on the track.
But I just had, if I could ask Jarl a question.
Yes, sure.
Because I'm convinced in my own feeble mind that you can probably reach a high percent of your potential of about 65 miles a week.
Yes.
There's a
law of diminishing returns.
Right. And I think it's around 65. And then after that, if it's 65 miles a week, you know, you could run 212, 215. It's worth it going to 120 because you might get down 205, 206. Yeah. You know, but for most people, I don't think they need the super high mileage. You know, up through the marathon.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, at 65 a week, running a 20 every week, or at least every other week, I think you might get 95% of your potential.
Of course, it all depends on your talent level, too. I mean, maybe we don't know how fast you could have been if you'd have done more. Because in general, more is better.
Right.
Until more is too much. Exactly. Whatever that is.
Exactly.
But
your body will tell you.
Yeah. One of the things I've always thought about is the more you run, it increases your chances of doing better, but it doesn't guarantee anything. Mm-hmm. But it greatly increased your chance. I don't think I would have ever gotten close to my PRs without the high mileage, but I was able to do it. Mm-hmm. And if you have a lifestyle that doesn't allow you to run that much, you just do as much as you can and take what you get. But I think there are very few elite athletes that get there at that mileage, but maybe it's their talent level too. You know?
Okay. Wait, I have to say, so Jess Koski was on our podcast, and he said the exact same thing. Literally, 95% of your potential you can reach if you just get to that magic 3-digit 100-mile-a-week.
Yeah, well, yeah.
So that's what he said.
Yeah, I say you can reach it at 65 miles.
Right. Maybe it's
he's a 51-second 400-meter.
Or maybe it's like you, Harry, can reach your 95% of your potential from what you've perceived, you know, over the long career, you know, and Jess felt that. I would say Jess felt that he wouldn't have reached his potential without hitting 100. And so, I mean, that's just one man's poison.
Oh, yeah. Right.
I like to think of high mileage, whatever high is for an individual, but we'll just say high mileage, as basically another way of seeing the amount of time you spend practicing your craft. And so if you run 100 miles a week and then you run 50 miles a week, you've now ran half as much time. So you've spent half as much time. You've ran half as much distance, so you've spent half as much time practicing your craft. And I can't think of any other endeavor, let's just say it's playing the piano, where they would say you need to practice a lot less in order to get better.
Yeah, but how many people run 200 miles a week and survive?
Right. There are differences. Yeah. It's not a cut and dry.
It seems that the elites, it's everything I've heard about 120 to 140 seems to be
that's pretty
you know, I'm talking guys sub 205 guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, beyond mind-boggling. And of course, then the sub 2-hour marathon, regardless if it was a staged event and all of that, it did demonstrate that the human body can run a marathon under 2 hours. Right. It can be done.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, I just always thought that. You know, I mean, I ran sub 230 marathons off 50, 60 miles a week.
Yeah.
But it's also the thing is, it's kind of like the money in the bank. Once you've had these months and months at 65, 80 miles a week with an occasional 90 or 100, then you cut back to 60 miles a week. Well, you still have this background that you're going to maintain for a long time.
So there's another thing to throw into that. if you build up to, in a 6-month span, you build up to 60 miles a week, and then you run your marathon, and then you take a month or two off, and you're at 30, and you kind of dink around through the wintertime, and then you try it, and then you're at 20 through the winter, and then you go back to that 60. That's not the cycle necessarily. You want to kind of maintain that and think, like your coach said, think long term. Mm-hmm. So I would say that if you want 60 to 80, you need to maintain 60 to 80 for years, not just doing it in a 6-month cycle and then falling back and kind of not running a little bit and then trying to build back to 60.
During my heyday of running, I would drop back in November and December.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
for 2 months.
Yeah, nice.
And then it would refresh me for January.
Okay.
Where I live in California, our big road race was February.
Okay.
And with a 10K in January to kind of see where you were.
Okay.
And so, but when I cut back in mileage, you know, I mean, I know it sounds strange, and I might only run 20, 30 miles a week.
Okay.
But I generally run 1 10-miler at sub-6-minute pace.
Yeah, so you catch some intensity.
Stay sharp.
Just to keep the sharpness there. But, you know, so, I mean, it wasn't like, you know, I was just kind of an active rest. But it was a thing, that fear of losing it, as long as I could run. And that was, when I was younger, that was, if I could, to start training versus running, the threshold was I had to be able to run a sub-60-minute 10-miler. I mean, that was in my mind.
Gotcha.
Later, it became 70. Mm-hmm. Then it became 80. You know, now it's non-existent. The one thing I would, if I had to do it over, I still don't know if my body could have handled the mileage, you know, even if I had had a leisure life. But what I would do different would be adding biking.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I've done some biking,
cross
I would have kept the mileage.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And just add them,
and then add in to, you know, at least twice a week, 90-minute to 2-hour bike, you know, hard bike rides.
Mm.
In that it's different muscles,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so I think that would have helped. You know, would have given me more endurance, and you know, and I didn't start running the 22 to 24 range until I was almost 40, and you know. In hindsight, I should have been running. And the reason that we used to, when I was in the cities, run that range, it was just to be on your feet for what would, for the time we'd be running a marathon, you know, for a marathon
time-wise.
Time-wise.
Simulation almost.
And that would have only added, what, four miles a week?
I'm surmising from all this is that even though he's a 224 marathon, he was underperforming all this time because he wasn't running enough mileage and he wasn't doing his biking. He's really a 215 marathoner that never did it.
Right.
I appreciate that, Gerald.
That's my take on it.
But again, it gets back to, you know, you got to play to your body. You know, I stopped doing, you know, if I could have maintained interval training and speed work, I'm convinced I could have run a faster marathon, but I started having hamstring problems, and so, you know, just go on long runs, get warm, and then hammer.
I mean, you're doing lower mileage, but, like, you're doing some, I would say, you know, quality miles, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So do you think you can interchange and kind of have the same effect of, say, what it is, your 224 marathon or your, you know, kind of your 95% potential? Can you substitute like 100 miles of junk miles for 65 miles of more, air quote, you know, quality running, whether it be doing the 10-mile tempo, doing intervals?
I guess I'd say I don't think there's really junk miles.
Yeah, thank you.
You know, unless you're going out, you know, I'm talking about a 15-minute 5K runner going out and shuffling through 3 miles at 8-minute pace. That might be junk miles. But overall, every mile helps.
Mm-hmm.
And if I had to do it over, not only would I find more softer surfaces, but I would have run longer and slower for my long runs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, seriously, it was not uncommon to do 20-mile workouts under 2 hours. That was my norm.
Yeah.
And
that's a tax on the body, you know?
Oh, I mean, it was, you know, in hindsight, it would have been better. I really think Jarl's method was better. I think it would have been better to have just run longer, both time-wise and mileage-wise.
Well, you fell into a bad crowd.
I didn't fall into a bad. I loved it, and that's. Yeah, but the thing, I was raised on running fast, and running fast is a relative term.
Right.
Basically, pounding your body. That's
pushing it.
That was my love of running, to going out and seeing what the body can do.
Yeah. Smash it, yeah.
Yeah.
Jarl, what do you think? Is that interchangeable? 100
well,
mile.
There's a sliding scale. I mean, you can as you lower your mileage, you can bring up your intensity, but you have to find out where that is before you break down. You know, because you can do a lot more if it's not hard, and that's what worked for me. And whenever I ran too much too hard, I would get hurt. So I was more of a high volume, you know, lower intensity with a few workouts here and there instead. But I you know, when you've got a group of people running fast, running fast with them is an end in itself. It's part of why run.
Right.
So you can share that ability and that feeling with these people. And even if it doesn't eventually end up giving you in great shape for a certain race, you've had that.
Right.
And you will always have that. So
yeah, and it's interesting when we get together, the old group from the cities, and you know, virtually everybody's 70 and over now. We have very few conversations about races, but we do about workouts, yeah. Memorable workouts.
Yeah.
You know, Tim O'Brien and I, one hot day, we lagged behind and we finally got back. And I said, "What took you so long?" Tim said, "Well, we kept waiting for a stop sign to turn green." You know, but a lot of stories on some pretty incredible workouts that we did. And, you know, but you're right. It was part of the culture, part of the social issue, and
right.
You know, I one year, I think it was when I was 40, I blew Twin Cities Marathon by 2 weeks before running an incredible 21-mile workout.
Yeah.
However, to this day, that's one of the most talked about workouts ever.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, like Bruce Mortensen, my good friend, said, you know, if you hadn't done it, you would have run yet another 230 marathon. Who cares?
Right, mm-hmm. That's true.
The workout was so incredible.
Yeah,
you know, so
yeah.
It's craziness. At you know, like I say, I think you need to run long once a week, hard once a week, and supplement it with biking.
Hmm. Or some cross training.
Yeah, or some aerobic cross training.
Swimming
swimming. If you got a pool, I mean, it's easier to hop on a bike than find a swimming pool.
Yeah.
But pool, and you know, and beyond that, it gets difficult. You know, and coaching now, it becomes, and it's difficult when you've got a large group of young kids because it isn't like that you can know them all individually and have, you know, mm-hmm. 50 individual workouts and mm-hmm. all. But, you know, you just do the best you can by kind of watching them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and the thing, particularly, you know, we're talking track cross country with high school kids is, you know, don't race in workouts.
Yeah.
Leave that till you get into your 30s and are out doing training runs with your friends.
Right. Right.
But, you know, and it's hard to get that across sometimes.
Yeah, it takes a while to build that strength.
Yeah.
Even though it's maybe people in their 30s and 40s, that old man strength and relative to a high school kid, 30s and 40s is old. And that helps, you know, to have that kind of strength.
But, you know, I guess I also... You know, looking at it from somebody who was at least a decent marathon, you know, I mean, there's people running 20 minutes faster than I ever ran. So from my perspective, okay, I ran good marathon, but, you know, not that good. But the one thing about marathons in particular is that, you know, everyone who finishes is incredible accomplishment. You don't care, they're 6 hours.
Yeah.
You know, it's mm-hmm. absolutely incredible. I mean, that's... Yeah. You've pushed the body in, kind of to quote the late Dan Conway, that, we all tied. We all finished on Saturday after a race.
Yeah.
There is that aspect,
yeah,
I think, of
running,
particularly, like, say, the marathon or even beyond that. It's like, you don't care. And, you know, and I see people out running and, you know, I actually... While I was still running, I'd be inspired. You know, I'd be driving home from work thinking, oh, maybe I'll just take the night off and see somebody out there, you know, overweight, you know, not built like a runner, and they're out running. Okay. And I mean, it was an inspiration to me. Say, okay.
Yeah.
You know, I got to get out there and run. And I really, you know, good grief. You know, in my prime, I was 6'1" and a half, 145 pounds, resting pulse of low 40s.
Yeah.
You know, good grief. Of course I should have been a decent runner. You know, I mean, you know, and then I see people who, you know, and that's why I love the running boom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, prior to the running boom, Darryl can remember back. So it was much younger. I don't know. Maybe you
did. We're talking about the 70s now.
Well, pre-70s.
Oh, then you can't. Then I don't go that far back.
But I mean, we had road races. You know, maybe 15, 20 people show up. You knew what the order of finish would be unless somebody upset. And you probably could predict everybody's time within 15 seconds, you know. And it was the same people. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden the running boom and things changed and there were so many more people. And, you know, it's so inspiring, you know, even for fast runners. I remember back in the 70s when Bill Rogers won the Houston Marathon. Picked up $30,000. He kept the check, but he saw this guy running after the award ceremony. He saw this guy running, and he went over. And you know, the guy came through the finish, and Bill asked him. He says, "Are you just finishing the marathon?" He said, "Yeah." He says, "I'm a little disappointed. I just missed 6 hours, so I'm not an official finisher." And Roger says, "You've been running for 6 hours solid?" He says, "Yeah." He said, "Here, take my trophy." He says, "You're a better man than I." Aww. He says, "I could never run for 6 hours." He was just amazed this guy could do it. Yeah. So there is that respect, that, you know.
But same like effort, right?
I mean, it's effort. I mean, from Roger's perspective, that was a greater effort.
Oh, sure.
That's so cool.
I mean, 6 hours of constant running?
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't comprehend that a person could do that.
Yeah. Exactly. It's basically an ultra marathon, other than the distance, but time-wise,
it's,
it's 50-mile racing. It's 50K to 50 miles.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. That's cool. Any other questions, Mike? I have a million more, but I'm afraid it can get kind of really long, but...
Yeah, I'd say, you know, we could talk about this forever, so...
We could have part two sometime.
Yeah, we could totally have part two sometime. That'd be great.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, as you know, I've coached the last couple of years cross-country, and at Proctor, great group of kids. God, that's the fun of coaching, is the kids keep you young. But a lot of what I do is, don't be like Harry. Stay on the soft surfaces.
Right. Yeah. Do as I say.
You don't have to go on these long, unbelievable runs, you know.
Yeah.
And you don't have to pound every workout.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, I guess I do have one question. If there's someone out there who just is struggling, you know, just like, you know, wants this goal or something, you know, just has this kind of block in their plateaued in their running or something, what's like a training tip, kind of roundtable discussion? What's a training tip, like one big training tip that you'd say? Is it get to that 100 mile? Is it do that, you know, do more speed work? Or what's your like kind of one tip?
I don't know.
Not knowing the person, just saying,
this is just a fake. I don't know if I can, you know, without knowing more. I mean, they got to keep it fun. You know, if there's a block, it's probably because it's too much pressure.
Uh-huh.
You know, and that means we've gotten out of the fun zone and we've gotten into, you know, it depends on if this person's a professional athlete. Uh-huh. Probably not. They're making themselves miserable, so they need to rethink what they're doing, try to make it fun, change the goal, you know, train for a new race they've never done before, and you know, and then come back to it later, because it sounds like they're just making themselves miserable if they're, you know, getting too worked up about any one thing. Mm-hmm. Like I was trying to qualify for Western States 100 miler for years and years, and then once I realized it wasn't going to happen, things have been a lot nicer. You know? I was that person you were just talking about a few years ago.
I think everyone has at some point banging
my head against this trying to qualify, and it's just too hard. In my time of life to get the qualifier, and so now I've changed my goals. Uh-huh. And I'm running local races and 5K races, and I'm having a blast. So that would be my advice to this person.
Keep it fun.
Yeah, try to keep it fun. Nice. Instead of trying to, you know, break through necessarily, just change the rules.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah. I guess one thing I would suggest is rest. Maybe get away from it for a bit.
Yeah.
And you know, it depends on all the variables Jar was talking about. That, you know, say it was a 10K.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that they just can't get to where they want to be. You know, maybe just think about running some 5Ks for a bit, or 10 mile. Run some different distances. You know, a good 10 mile will give you confidence. A good 5K will give you confidence.
Sure.
Rest some. You know, I was thinking again with Charlie Lawrence running for Brooks now as a professional runner. Oh, mm-hmm. What a life. Mm-hmm. Talking to him was unbelievable.
Yeah.
But, you know, they pushed the guys to the limit.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he was here, I don't know, I guess it was November, he was over at the house, and He said, this is a 10-day rest cycle. And I asked him, how much do you run during your rest cycle? He said, rest cycle. We don't run a step.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And, yeah. So that's another thing, you know, I learned too late. So I used to take rests, you know, November, December.
Yeah.
But, you know, so, I mean, here's professional runners.
Wow.
Running hard. And the fatigue setting in. I mean, they, you know, these guys are monitored daily, you know, medically monitored and all. And then you just say, okay, you're going to take 10 days off. I don't want you to run.
Wow.
Go out and enjoy life.
Yeah.
And you come back and we're going 120, 130 miles a week.
Uh-huh.
And you're going to be refreshed.
Right.
You know, when they're running, you know, at that 80, 90, or 80 to 100 mile a week, if they were to say, okay, now we're going to crank it up to 120, 130, it'd be, oh, no. 10 days rest, went back. Charlie said it was great, you know, feeling good.
Yeah.
And I'm so curious because this Saturday, is the trials, marathon trials, and have two local kids, you know, with Matt and Charlie in it. I'm really, neither of them looking at qualifying. It's interesting talking with Charlie, you know, which kind of like job security of somewhat, you know, as a professional runner.
Yeah.
They're training him for the marathon in 2024.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this is just to see where he is.
Yeah.
With his goal to try and get top 10.
Wow.
Which is, a, you know, I mean, that's a good goal. Yeah. But kind of nice. They're training me now, you know. This is 2019, you know.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm peaking in 5 years, you know. Just stay injury free.
Wow.
Yeah. But I think sometimes rest, getting away from it.
Yeah.
And if it's a distance that you're frustrated with, start running shorter and longer and just don't worry about it. It'll, you know, it'll come back someday.
Yeah.
And, you know, and maybe, you know, depending on where you are, you got to set realistic goals.
Sure.
You know, if you're a, you know, if you've run 37 minute 10K, which is 6 minute pace, You know, say, oh, okay, I've run 6 minute pace. My next goal's to run 32 minutes.
Yeah.
No. So you ran 37. Next goal should be 36, not 32. Yeah. You're going to get real free. Now, you may run 32 someday.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, like they say, how you eat an elephant, one bite at a time.
You've
got to take it slow.
Do they say that?
Yeah, that's what people say.
Yeah.
If you go to conferences, that's what they always tell you. You know, words of wisdom from some fool.
What would you say, Tony?
So I would echo those statements for sure, and I kind of have four words that I typically preach, especially to some of my training group people: patience, consistency, belief, and gratitude are the four words. So patience running is, you know, like that Charlie Lawrence is training for 2024,
right?
You know, that's patience. Mm-hmm. It's 5 years from now, or 4 years from now, but 5 years for the training. You know, I think running is a delayed gratification sport, and in our kind of lives of so much instant gratification, it's kind of welcoming to have something that's long term. So I think that's important to value that and be patient with it. And of course, you got to be consistent at anything if you want to succeed. You just got to keep doing it over and over and over. So you got to stay in that mindset of running. Even with taking a 10-day break or a little bit of break, you still need to just boom, always be on it. And then believe in yourself. That's, to me, it all starts there with kind of the idea of hope and belief. And then it gets overlooked is being grateful. Being grateful for the opportunities that you have.
Mm-hmm.
You can look back on your 21-mile workouts and with some pride and that kind of stuff. And then you get to talk with wizened veterans like these two guys here. I'm grateful for those opportunities. I'm grateful for being able to pass down other things because, you know, like we've mentioned something, kind of a theme in our podcast is the idea of kind of links in a chain, and you've had your mentors and I've had my mentors, and now we're able to mentor other people, and it's going to continue on, and that's kind of a cool thing. So being grateful for that.
Yeah, just echo the being grateful. I mean, I became grateful too late, maybe. You know, I never thought the day would come that I would not be able to run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so in hindsight, I'm really grateful for nearly a 60-year career.
Yeah.
But I wasn't that grateful while it was happening.
Well, I'm going to hand it to you, Harry, though. You've handed it better than a lot of people, or like maybe I would. I mean, I haven't got there yet, but
you won't get there.
Well, I don't know. But I mean, you've been really upbeat about this. You're still out there walking. You're still coaching. You're still inspiring people. You're not bitter and angry like you could be. So I got to hand it to you.
That's
for
super
that.
Cool, for sure.
Yeah, I appreciate
that's,
it.
That's a good lesson for all of us, too.
Yeah. And that reminds me of my good friend, Doug Suker, who's been injured off and on. And I remember years ago when we were running, and he's 5 years younger than I am. So technically, we're not always in the same age group, you know, with the 5 year age groups. And I remember him saying, "Yeah, I am." He says, "Yeah, you're going to be 95, and I'll turn 90, and you're going to be complaining. Yeah, but you're a young 90-year-old. You should be. We should be in the same age group." And I think both of us absolutely believe then, you know, uh-huh. we're in our late 30s. Yeah, we'd be racing into our 90s, yeah. you know. And he's back, Ray. He's had some real problems, but he's back. But he's very grateful because he's been near the end and knows it. So a person being healthy and just being able to do any type of physical activity should be grateful.
All right. Well, thanks, gentlemen. I think that wraps it up. This was a fun conversation. And like you said, Daryl, maybe we'll have to do part two sometime.
Yeah, sure.
It'll be fun.
Yeah.
Cool. Thank you. All right. And that wraps up episode number 16 of the Duluth Rundown podcast. Thanks a lot for joining us. Thanks to Jaro and Harry for a really cool conversation today about training ideas, training theories, kind of what works, what doesn't work. It all works. None of it works.
Mm-hmm.
If we solved that mystery. Mike, you got anything to add?
You can find this podcast on anywhere that you get podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Google Play, theduluthrundown.com, and on Facebook.
Cool. Thanks, everybody. See you next time.